And continuing with the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're really glad we could have Diana Johnston as our guest. Her books are tremendous. If you haven't read them, I really urge you to. And of course, you can follow her at Consortium News. She herself sometimes is the center of the story in that she's one of the journalists who is widely discussed. Because of her integrity and issues that she has stood up for. If people remember Counterpunch, which is whose reputation has slipped a bit, decided they didn't want to continue with her, and other journals picked her up rather quickly. And it's a good story in and of itself. She mentioned something which I think it's an opportunity to highlight here. We're talking about Syria. Diana pointed out that those who are now saying that journals like Gray Zone and others are wrong in claiming that the U.S. is the center of things that in Syria. And here's a Wall Street Journal headline. This is recent. It says, U.S. sends forces to protect Syrian oil fields. The move marks a shift from President Trump's decision to pull most troops from the country to protect Syrian oil fields. They're talking about Syria's oil fields, and the U.S. is exploiting them. U.S. has built a base. Basically, it's a case of, so far, theft of sovereign territory and exploitation of that territory. And that's the way the Wall Street Journal writes about it. And yet we have these clowns like Mr. I want to call him Ashcraft, but that's not his name. At any rate, those who have put together this attack on the work of Graysham, it's Ashkar. So now, over the years, when I'm keeping alive here the memory and the advice and guidance I received from Ramsey Clark. As I spoke previously last week, we did a homage to Ramsey. But one of the things he liked to repeat, and which I took to heart, was something he said that he'd learned from a major U.S. congressman, Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn, whom Ramsey admired. Sam Rayburn was part of the drive to get the civil rights legislation of the mid-1960s, which was so crucial. It was the most important legislation protecting the rights of all Americans and guaranteeing the rights of Black Americans who had been, through official and legal segregation, had been denied their rights. And it took the Civil Rights Act legislation, much of it drafted by Ramsey Clark, to come into being. Sam Rayburn played a big part in that. And frankly, so did, Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson is always hard to talk about because he's almost like schizophrenia. Lyndon Johnson launched a war on poverty. He brought in this legislation on civil rights. And frankly, most of it now is being dismantled, but it is a credit. But it unfortunately also tried to maintain a very aggressive foreign policy. He tried to impose on the Vietnamese people, and the U.S. failed mightily. Richard Nixon came in and attempted to do the same, failed. And so you could say, actually, the Vietnamese struck a great blow for human rights when they won a victory in their right to self-determination and sovereignty. But going back to, all the way back to Sam Rayburn, he said Rayburn told him, when you're talking, you're not listening. And I've always noticed that if you were around Ramsey and there was a discussion going on, he was listening very closely. And that way he, when he did say something, he was speaking to what he heard, not to something he had concocted or what he'd been thinking about all day. He's actually listening very closely. Which is brings me to this point. I think that we need to pay now very close attention to what is being said by world leaders, representatives of countries like Cuba, Venezuela, Islamic Republic, China, Russia, because the U.S. and Canada are in a mode, and they're kind of casually refer to it, the new Cold War, as though that's somehow something people really just, you know, guess what, we've turned to move the dial to the new Cold War. We ought to oppose that kind of cavalier, crazy business, because the old Cold War was plenty dangerous and is no less dangerous now. And we do have an administration which is as bullying as previous. We have, for example, the news that the United States is, after saying, Joe Biden said when he was running for president, he said he was going to resume the Obama policies towards Cuba. But they had a press conference the other day, and the secretary was asked, well, what about that? Because as he went out the door, Donald Trump put Cuba back on the terror list, and which really complicates relations. We're going to ask Keith Bollinger to come join us on the Taylor Report to explain this, because as we promised, that we were all waiting to see what's going to happen. But so Donald Trump, just as a little hot foot for Biden, as he and Pompeo went out the door, they decided to put Cuba back on the terrorist list. You notice how cavalier that is, by the way. I mean, if a state is a sponsor of terror, that would be a fact. I mean, one assumes you establish fact, and then you make a legal case, and then you make the political argument that therefore you have to change your policy. But what we're seeing in the U.S. government, and of course Canadians don't disagree, is a kind of game where a country is on the list and then they're taken off the list, just as a kind of gesture. Which means it's the question of terrorism has no particular relevance. Actually, what's going on is just political, old style political manipulation, and it's not pretty to watch. And we should be opposing it, but of course, Canada is not being the good friend of the United States. I said last week on the show, Ramsey Clark used to say in speeches here when he visited Canada, Montreal, Toronto, he would say, please be America's good friend and advise it to sober up in its policies and to respect other countries and to respect international law and the United Nations. That would be the helpful role that Canada could provide. Instead of being the no-hassle vassal that it is, we're living in this silly situation where a hostage was taken on behalf of Donald Trump in order to improve his trade war leverage with China. So he asked Canada to take this Meng Wanzhou a hostage. I understand it's a little, they decorated it with legalisms, but it was clear that's what it was, and it certainly wasn't in Canada's interest. Canada had to shoot itself in the foot to carry out the mission. So we have that kind of situation where orders are given and orders are followed, which doesn't bode well for should relations with China, Russia continue to deteriorate. And they are deteriorating. I think we should, following advice of Ramsey Clark, pay attention and understand what's being said about the recent steps by the U.S. government, because the U.S. government's not the only country involved, and we need to know what the Russian position is. And so I have an item that I want to. This has to do with Ukraine, where quite dangerous situation is developing. The Globe and Mail and others have been talking about this as though it's somehow acceptable that we moved into a confrontation over Ukraine with Russia. And we do this, of course, by just simply saying they're the bad guys and we're going to do it. So here's a question that was put to the Russian foreign minister. The Ukrainian foreign ministry said it had sent a request to Russia on the situation of the border, but Russia refused to give any explanation. And what is your comment? And this is the response from Maria Zakharova. Ukraine invoked the 2011 Vienna document on confidence and security building measures to request that Russia, via the OSCE channels, provide information on the purpose of Russia's military activities near Ukraine's border and in the Autonomous Republic of Crimea, temporarily occupied by the Russian Federation, the exact locations used for the operation, its completion dates, as well as the name, subordination number, and types of particular participating military units. She's quoting that document. Again, this is Zakharova. We preferred to overlook the mistake made in the request about the territorial affiliation of Crimea and answered on the merits. The Russian Federation is not engaged in any significant military activity on a scale that would require a notification under the Vienna document. All activities carried out by the armed forces of the Russian Federation and involving deployment of troops in the zone of application of confidence and security measures are part of a routine combat training and do not warrant notifications. On the other hand, we consider it necessary to highlight a truly alarming exacerbation of tension around Donbas due to the provocative actions by the Kiev regime. Kiev continues to send new military equipment to the contact line. From March 1 to March 31, the special monitoring mission reported 288 cases where Ukrainian weapons, including 142 pieces of large caliber artillery, were spotted at Donbas railway stations controlled by the armed forces of Ukraine. The number of attacks on the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics also increased. People forget, this is Phil Taylor, we forget they are shelling that region. This is the Kiev government, shells Donetsk. For the first time since last July, when additional measures were taken to strengthen the ceasefire, the armed forces of Ukraine used artillery prohibited by the Minsk agreements against the LPR. Unmanned aerial vehicles are increasingly used, and the number of victims among the civilian population is growing. There was publicity about a case involving the death of a child. And although Kiev tried to evade responsibility. The death was confirmed by the UN Human Rights Observer mission in Ukraine. But this is not the only problem. In fact, over the years, hundreds of boys and girls have been killed, not just one or ten, and their deaths remain unpunished and even unnoticed by the international community. It is as if they were turning a blind eye. This is just shocking. More and more statements and actions by representatives of the Kyiv regime prove its actual departure from the Minsk agreements. By and large, there seems to be nothing left of Vladimir Zelensky's pre-election statements and promises to end the war. His most recent remarks are openly aggressive and belligerent. At the same time, Ukraine is clearly counting on the intervention of its Western supervisors. Bad idea. Any scenarios of a forceful suppression of Donbas, let alone a seizure of Crimea, are infeasible and suicidal. We do not count on the sanity of those who took over power in Kyiv and deceived the expectations of people who believed in their peaceful intentions. By the way, this is one of the reasons why the Russian side does not invoke the relevant provisions of the Vienna document, which has been repeatedly violated by Ukraine. We appeal directly to those who, by their actions, in 2014 and later, took responsibility for the anti-constitutional armed coup and are responsible for the destruction of a peaceful multinational country. We call on Ukraine's allies to stop inciting the Kyiv regime, to bloody and destructive adventures by supplying weapons, ammunition, and non-lethal military products, as well as funding and providing intelligence training and political support. Russia is not interested in triggering a civil war in Donbas and will make every effort to protect its residents and ensure peace in that long-suffering region. This is our basic stance. Russian leaders have repeatedly spoken about this. Further, Maria Zakharova made some other points. She was asked about Turkey supplying drones, and she makes an important point. I won't read it all. I would like to point out a matter of principle. The civil war is underway in Ukraine. The nationalist forces have seized power in Kyiv in February 2014, have been conducting military operations against their own citizens for the last 7 years, using artillery, armored vehicles, and even combat drones. These forces came to power not through elections, but by staging a state coup. It was not the first time this was carried out, and they accomplished the coup with foreign assistance, including other from NATO countries, which has led to violence. This is the distinguishing feature of the situation. Civilians are being killed. They are unable to live peacefully. We pointed out numerous occasions that those who are interested in the developments in the region and Ukraine in general, primarily journalists, should visit Donbas, Donetsk, and Lugansk, where they will be able to use their professional skills to form their own opinion. They should talk with local people, not necessarily the military, but ordinary civilians, and ask them why many of them are worried by the delivery of weapons to Ukraine. They will answer your questions not based on theory, but because they know about this from their everyday lives. Civilians, were still children, go outside and never return home. We believe that the supply of weapons, including drones, to Ukraine from NATO countries, including Turkey, will not help bring about a peaceful settlement in Donbas. The international community has been using legal means with the aim of putting an end to the civil war in Ukraine on the basis of law. The Minsk package, by the way, this is the State Report, CIT 89.5, when she says Minsk package. I believe we should be reporting on this. People should know what these agreements are, the text of them, and who signed them, because we are very close to a major problem along the border between Russia and Ukraine. The Minsk package was drafted and adopted by the sides. These agreements have become binding after their approval by the UN Security Council. Do they say that arms deliveries to Ukraine should be increased to attain peace? Are arms deliveries to a key or additional element of the Minsk agreements aimed at restoring peace? No, they set out absolutely different measures. The Minsk package is a roadmap for peace and normal life. It does not mention weapons. These arms deliveries run counter to Ukraine's commitments. Why is Kyiv doing so much to receive ever more weapons and nothing to implement the binding provisions of the Minsk agreements? This policy is only fostering Ukraine's militarist aspirations and could encourage it to use military force to settle the internal conflict. This approach is diverting the Kyiv regime from the implementation of the Minsk agreements. This is extremely alarming. We will never tire in our efforts to draw attention to this and to urge Kyiv to comply with the Minsk agreements. Now I read this for the Taylor Report because to me, this is at the heart of it. We have to know what all sides are saying, and it has to come without the being chewed on and digested by CNN or the Globe and Mail or the New York Times, who actually begin with a spin. It's like that silly headline, the Americans are protecting a Syrian oil field. Just give me a break. If you want to know about the Syrian oil fields, you should go to the Syrian spokesperson, because it's their oil field. It is a sovereign country. And that's why on the Taylor Report we talk about these things, because this is a troubling matter. And if you don't listen closely to what the parties are saying, and I do urge you to, yes, go to the parties, go to the U.S. Canadians regularly swallow up whatever is fed to them by CNN or Fox, and watches all U.S. networks, reads all U.S. newspapers. But that isn't the world news. That's the U.S. telling you what they think the news is. And we need something quite different. Now, here's a matter that I think listeners to CIUT and the Taylor Report are interested in, should be. And I'm going to just read it. This is a Chinese spokesperson responding to a point. And this story has been largely neglected. It seems very important, particularly we're in a world where we have all, you know, like we have the Queen Party in Canada and such, who worry about the environment. So get a load of this. April 15, three independent experts appointed by the UN Human Rights Council expressed deep regret at Japan's decision to release nuclear wastewater into the ocean, saying the discharge could impact millions of lives and livelihoods in the Pacific region and impose considerable risk to the full enjoyment of human rights. The Pacific Island Forum, the Philippines, Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and others also expressed deep concern, urging Japan to take all necessary measures to avoid damaging the oceans, especially the global ecological environment. What is your comment? And Lao Zhiyan says in response, and this is a spokesperson for China, foreign ministry, we noted the responses from various sides. China has elaborated its stern position on Japan's decision to discharge Fukushima nuclear wastewater into the sea many times. Yesterday, China summoned the Japanese ambassador to China to lodge solemn representation. We urge Japan to face up to its responsibility, follow the science, fulfill its international obligations, and refrain from wantonly discharging the wastewater before reaching consensus with all stakeholders in international agencies through consultations. Countries find it hard to understand why Japan is bent on choosing a dangerous method that would undermine global marine environment before exhausting all safe ways of disposal. Japan says the wastewater has been treated and is clean. If so, why bother to seal it in tanks? Japan claims that the release follows international common practice and international standards. Which common practice is Japan referring to, since there is no precedent of discharging contaminated water from nuclear accident into the sea? Have the standards unilaterally put forward by Japan been verified, recognized by any third-party agency in an objective and independent manner? Japan claims to value external concerns, but it has fully consulted with neighboring countries and international environmental organizations. Why has it been reluctant for so long to set up a technical working group participated by Chinese experts and others within the framework of international organization and accept international assessment, verification, and surveillance? It is reported by Reuters that a senior Japanese official sent an email asking international media not to use contaminated to describe the nuclear wastewater. I'd like to ask the Japanese side, if the water is indeed not contaminated, what is gnawing at your conscience? The Japanese people were once victims of environmental pollution. Pollution diseases in Japan in the 20th century, including Minamata disease, the asthma and Ite diseases, are caused by the concentrated release of poisonous and hazardous materials. The diseases brought lingering suffering to tens of thousands of Japanese people. Now, the Japanese government is walking away from national morality and responsibility and trifling with the health and safety of future generations, including its own people. I must reiterate that dumping the nuclear wastewater into the sea cannot be the first option. Still less should it be taken as the only option. We urge Japan to be responsible for all humankind and future generations, and review and revoke the wrong decision Japan needs to face up to the unanimous call of countries in earnest. Accept the substantive participation and surveillance of China and wider international community. Handle the issue in an open and transparent manner. So this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And of course, we're doing this in the name of, beginning a practice echoing the thoughts of Ramsey Clark. And listen closely, particularly to those people that you define, and Biden does, and others, Biden and Trump, Obama, as adversaries, enemies, whatever you. It's very important for us to protect our own interests, that I'm talking about ordinary people, to look very closely at the opinions of those who are being smeared and talked about and gossiped about in the papers which are controlled by a tiny and wealthy minority. This is, again, Phil Taylor with the Taylor Report. We'll see you next week.